everyone. It's Angela Stevens, and I'm the podcast host with Refocus with Angela. And I have got one of the coolest guests. You're going to really enjoy meeting her today. Her name is Gina, or known as Dr. Gina Simmons Schneider. She's a PhD. She is the co-director of Schneider Counseling and Corporate Solutions. She's a licensed psychotherapist, a certified executive coach, and she's a corporate trainer, and she has over 25 years of experience. And she has so much to share with you, and we're going to talk about a lot of things that I think you're going to be really interested in terms of anxiety and anger and conflict resolution, and you're just going to enjoy this so much. So first of all, Dr. Gina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Angela. I'm excited to talk with you.
Absolutely. So before we get into anything that you do, I want to ask you a question. So this podcast is all about focusing and how people focus. I always say, everybody's not perfect, right? And we all have our days. So how do you start your day when you're not together in the morning or the night before? What is some of the things that help you focus to get ready for your day?
Well, one of the things I stumbled upon when as a teenager is out of curiosity, I learned how to meditate. So I start every morning with meditation, and I switch off between mindfulness meditation, which is just paying attention to the present moment on purpose without judging it. In other words, you have all this editorializing going on in your brain.
Right.
You know, I have an itch on my back. I don't feel good. This is boring. You know, all the thoughts just racing through your head, and you just sort of let those thoughts go and you center in your body. So I start every morning with that. When I'm about ready to do a presentation or something like that, I've studied some neuroscience tools. And one of them is I use my little frazzle brain, which you can use a little stress ball or you can use a tennis ball or something like that. And if you squeeze it 15 seconds, left hand, it activates the right brain, which actually studies show that it improves your performance. So it's the left hand activates right brain.
Love that. I've heard a lot of different things, but not exactly that. So that's fantastic.
It's a few seconds even. It's not a big deal. And what's interesting about it is it's a very subtle effect. But what it does is it when our mind is a little bit calmer and our anxiety is a little bit lower, we think clearly and we can access our full brain power. So another thing I do, if I'm feeling groggy or if I'm feeling extra stressed, I do a power walk, which is basically just, even if I'm pacing up and down the halls of my office or, but I take big steps with a bounce, like a trying to be really cool, like a really mm-hmm. cool walk with a deep bounce.
Right.
And waving your arms really wide. So you're cross body.
Yeah.
Of stuff too, right? Where your one arm's going out, you know, and the other leg is going out. So you're swinging your arms and it activates your heart, gets your heart beating a little faster, oxygenates your brain. But when you're moving your body in a real powerful way, you feel powerful. So our feelings follow our behavior. So if we're acting like we have energy, even if we don't have energy, it energizes the brain and energizes the body. So those are, you know, little
That's amazing.
Tips that I use.
Okay. I have a question. So when you use the stress ball and you use it, like let's say in the left hand, would you want to use it in the other hand or just one side?
You can, but you know, the thing about the left brain is it tends to be more detail oriented and hyper-focused kind of on details. And the right brain tends to be more thinking about things in a global way. And it's much more about where our positive emotions tend to reside. And studies show that when we can activate our positive emotions rather than our critical, you know, thinking very critically, our performance improves. So it's kind of a paradox. You know, you would think that if you're really detail oriented and really hyper focused on details and being really self-critical, that your performance will improve. But actually, the opposite is true. If you're thinking a little bit more optimistically, if you're thinking more holistically about what you're trying to accomplish, your performance actually improves.
That's fantastic.
It's sort of like if you're a musician and you're trying to sing, If you're just thinking, I'm singing a C, you know, a C, you're not going to be playing as musically as if you're thinking about the emotion you're trying to convey, the whole global experience of the music. You're going to perform, your body is going to comply with the vision that you're trying to create.
I love that. I was just going to say, out of 140 episodes, I've not had one person share that. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, so that's really terrific. So another thing is, you have a book out and it's called Frazzle Brain. I love that title. I asked her if she wrote it about me. I'm joking. Anyway, but tell us, I could sit here and I could talk to you all about it, but tell us about it, what it's called, what it's about, and why somebody would want to buy it.
What's great about Frazzle Brain is it's something that affects all of us. It's really about breaking free from anxiety, anger, and stress. And I use the foundation of neuropsychology research and some of the groundbreaking neuropsychology research about how the brain works. So what's interesting about anxiety, anger, and stress is those tend to be the distracting things that mess up our focus. Our emotions are the things that get in the way of our focus. And even though the book is not really written for ADHD or people with focusing problems, I think all of us have problems with managing emotions at times in our life. And the reason I came up with the title Frazzle Brain is that everybody can immediately relate to that, because when we are feeling like, you know, our child is sick and we got to pick them up at school, at the same time we have to do an important presentation, at the same time that we have to call the plumber because we have a leak in the house, at the same time we have a flat tire, you know, life comes at us all the time with all these different emotions all the time, and we have to sort of figure out how to prioritize and how to manage all of that. So what I was hearing in my clinical practice and even in my coaching practice is people were saying the word frazzled. I feel frazzled. And what happens when we feel frazzled is we feel a combination of pressure, like I got to hurry, got to hurry up, got to get something done quickly. Also a little bit foggy headed, a mild fatigue, and some irritability at the same time. I'm irritated. I have this pressure. My brain isn't very clear, right? And I'm kind of tired. I just want to relax. I just want to get away from it all, right? And all those feelings kind of combine, and I call that frazzle brain. So what the book is about is it breaks things up into three sections. It's really starts with our thinking. So I talk about how to focus our thoughts and techniques to focus thoughts, intentional behaviors, because if we can set our intention and behave in a certain way, our feelings tend to follow. For example, like the example of moving our body, like we have energy,
right?
We will start to feel like we have energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're embodying what an energetic body is doing. Yes. So our feelings follow our actions. So if we're taking charge of the intention to do a certain behavior, then our feelings will follow. And so there are certain intentional behaviors that we know are good for our body, reduce inflammation, things like kindness, things like acts of kindness. When we hold someone's hand who's in the hospital,
so true.
It makes us feel better inside. It also has healing effects on the person whose hands we're holding. So acts of kindness that we can do intentionally are really good for our nervous system.
Yeah.
And we read about all of this. It's good to be kind. It's good to be, you know, well, it's actually for our brain and our body and our entire nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's very healing. So anytime we can amplify that, that's great.
You know, there's something I was going to share with you. There's something that I do with my staff. And I just want to share this in case anyone does this. But when I travel with them, if a host or a bellman or the agent at the airlines, anyone does anything over and above and shows kindness to you, I always say, get their number, find out who their manager is or their company, tweet about it, write to the company. I said, because people complain, they don't write about great things. And I said, we should all do a little more of that. Right.
That is so beautiful. Cause I work with people who are pilots and in that industry, and they are getting besieged with hostility.
Yes. And here's the thing. My staff loves it because they come back and they say, you've taught me to do that. And now I go do that on my own. And I tell other people to do that. And isn't that what it's all about?
And it feels good. It feels good to like think about maybe making somebody's day, maybe helping somebody's life be a little bit better because they were kind, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's so much cruelty that has become popularized in our culture. And it's so, with the trolling and all of that. And and it's just so toxic and unnecessary and such it is really harmful for the people who are inhabiting that hostile mindset. It's really bad for their heart.
Absolutely.
And so, even if you have selfish motives, if you're behaving kindly, you're making the world a better place. And so I do think it's one of those things that the research bears out. And the third part of frazzled brain is dealing with healing experiences, because one of the interesting things about trauma, and many of us have had severe trauma, and most of us will not make it through life without going through some life-threatening experiences, some traumatic experiences. And what happens with trauma is our brain is wired to never forget what happened so that we can protect ourselves. It's a good survival skill. The problem with trauma, though, is that if we get stuck there, it can make our life feel very miserable and unhappy and stuck and fearful and we can have extreme reactions that are harmful. So to recover from trauma, we need healing experiences. But what people don't realize is that we can choose healing experiences.
Right.
We can choose and seek out experiences that heal. And we know mindfulness is one of those experiences that can heal us. If we have mindfulness meditation experiences, we have experiences where we are fully present in the moment, watching a beautiful waterfall, for example. It has healing effects. A walk in the forest has healing effects. Inhaling all those wood essential oils and all of the natural chemicals that we find in a forest, it has about 30 days of antidepressant effects on our brain, 2 hours in the forest. So we can intentionally seek out these experiences. We don't have to just wait for something good to happen to us.
You are exactly right. I have a question about that. So you do coaching. Do you do coaching for adults or young adults or what ages?
Yes, I work with adults. I used to work with teens early in my career and children, but I don't any longer. So adults of all ages.
Okay. So, but I do have a question since you have done this. So we have products and we get all different ages on here that are our customers, but I hear this, the young adults go, mindfulness doesn't work for me. Like it doesn't work. And it's funny because I don't think they understand it. I don't think they've been appropriately taught mindfulness. So do you have any tips for parents that maybe has a young adult, teenager, or maybe a young college student that could benefit by mindfulness, but they're too busy. They're on their phone. They're too busy to do it. So, I mean, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, there is a real resistance in our culture, I think, with people of all ages, a real resistance to meditation. Because there's this idea that we have to be productive all the time. And also we're overstimulated all the time. And that's why we have a very frazzled culture. We're overstimulated. There's studies on dopamine responses that we're used to this, you know,
Right.
scrolling through the phone. Oh, funny cat video. Oh, scrolling through the phone. Oh, depressing, you know, people are violent. Oh, scrolling through, you know, and our brain is just going boom, boom, you know, releasing all of these chemicals. And then when we put it down and we sit and we just stare at a tree, we're like going out of our gourd with boredom.
Right.
Right. And so our children are hyper-stimulated and they're alienated from their own nature.
So true. More
And
than we ever were.
adults are as well. Adults become alienated from our own nature when we cannot sit and just look at a tree.
So
Just
true.
look at a tree. If you really look at a tree, any tree, find a tree. If you actually really look at it mindfully, you will notice things. You will notice that the bark is multicolored. It's
Right.
golden and brown and black and gray and silver. You will notice that the wind affects the leaves in different varying ways. You might notice that there's a lot of life in that tree. There's all kinds of life forms in that tree. You might notice so much of the moment that you're in that has just gone by you because looking at a tree is boring and it's not as
True.
fun as scrolling through and watching somebody jump off a building with a skateboard, you know? So I think that it's hard to convince people that being bored is good for them because we think of boredom as this really you know, terrible state
Yeah.
of feeling lost
Right.
and feeling directionless and so forth. But all creativity comes from nothingness, from doing nothing, you know.
Absolutely.
And so I think parents also in our culture, especially American culture, it's all about productivity and achievement and getting successful and getting a good job. And we tear our children away from fun, real fun. Real fun, you know, rolling down a grassy hill, picking up sticks and pretending that they're wizards and sword fights and, you know, children who are connected with their nature can be profoundly creative, you know,
Yeah.
making things out of whatever's around them. And creativity is going to is the source of all problem solving. I mean, we have big problems we're going to have to deal with, and, you know, and climate change and all these things in the world are happening, and it's going to have to come from some creative imaginations. So, you know, I work a lot with parents and with adults, and I say, you know, give yourself a vacation from your cell phone, put it down, be in the moment. You can practice mindfulness all the time anywhere. You can mindfully wash dishes. You can mindfully fold your clothing. You can mindfully have a conversation
And
where
our
real
children watch us.
communication could happen. Oh, they do. They do.
And if we can do that, maybe they will mimic that as well.
Right. But I think also we can tease that out. You know, we can create these little oases of connection, of true connection too. Because when we are in our phones, we're not connecting with another human being, you know, and we see this everywhere. We see this everywhere we go. People do not connect, you know, they're on their phone. So that's harmful to our mental health. It's harmful to our physical health because sometimes we don't even know how we're sitting, and all of a sudden we'll have pain. We'll have shooting pains coming up our back. Well, if we were mindful, we might notice that we've been, you know, like this, you know,
Right, right, right.
you know, and we're not paying attention, and we can make a small little correction in our breathing and our posture, and all of a sudden, pain goes away. So I do think that people are resistant to it. So There's all kinds of apps out there now. There's the Calm app. There's, Peloton meditations available.
I love it. Do you do video coaching or do you do in-person coaching, by the way?
Everything I do is 100% virtual,
Okay,
and
got
so
it.
I do video conferencing,
Perfect.
except for public speaking. I do public speaking engagements that are live.
Sure. And she's into music. We have a note on here that she sings and she plays bass guitar for a rock band called One Track Mind, right? I love that.
Yes,
I love that.
thank
You are
you.
never too old, right, to do anything.
Never too old
Never, never too old.
to have a happy childhood, right?
I love that. I love that. So, first of all, I just want to say I could talk to you for hours because for any of you that are just listening to Dr. Gina for the first time, we have this saying in our company, and we say, we all get so busy that sometimes we need to stop, take a moment, and refocus. And she has a beautiful way of calming you just in conversation. And even in this conversation, it comes across. And I really want to convey that to our audience because you do a beautiful job with that. So I
Thank
just
you
want
so
to,
much.
you're so
Thank you.
welcome. Conflict resolution, you talk a lot about that. Can you tell us, first of all, for anyone that may or may not know what conflict resolution is and how you address that?
Well, one of my coaching practices is I work with executives, managers, supervisors who are dealing with interpersonal conflict in the workplace. And studies show about 33% of a manager's time is spent dealing with interpersonal conflicts. That's not even getting any of their regular work done, right? And that's the number one complaint most managers have is why are people acting so ridiculous? Why are they having a fight over where we put the wastebasket, or the
Right.
water cooler, what a lot of what they determine are petty grievances, right? That sometimes aren't petty, but sometimes they are. So most of us come at the world from a history and a familiarity with certain cultural and norms. And some people, I work with people who, for example, in some big manufacturing industries where some people come from the military culture, where it's just yes, sir, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You're told what to do, you just do it. Other people come from the nonprofit sector where it's like everything's collaborative and let's share our ideas. And it's more of a democratic process of
Yeah.
decision making, right? Some people come from cultures that are more collective in their embrace of sort of collective goals. And others, like American culture, is more about, give me an award for showing up,
Right, right,
and
right.
we like to stand out and we like to celebrate the individual. And so if you come from a more collectivist culture and you're given an award, those folks might not be all that excited. They might feel a little embarrassed about getting the
Right.
award. Their team didn't get recognized and they don't want to stand out and it feels sort of shameful. And then the person who gave him the award is like, "What's wrong with you? Why aren't you proud? So and so over here really got excited and they're really kickstarted their motivation because they got this award." So I work with people on trying to listen more and understand that there's no right or wrong. There's
Yeah.
just differences, right? And
Yeah.
so but the differences are valuable. Like these companies that are really, really doing well have diverse, workforces
Right.
where there's a lot of different types of folks.
Exactly.
And
That's a beautiful explanation, really, because you're exactly right. More
that
than
helps
ever.
you compete in a global marketplace if you can understand different cultures and different norms. And you can appreciate and value what each norm has to offer, right?
Yeah.
Instead of like, my way's the right way, you're the weirdo. So a lot of what we work with is helping people manage their own feelings because whenever we have a culture clash or a conflict of perception or some kind of a jam in our desire to accomplish something. You know, we get frustrated whenever that happens. We tend to want to jam our agenda through and demonize the other person. They're or pathologize them. You know, you're somehow abnormal.
Right.
You're defective. You're bad. And so that tends to intensify conflicts and cement them. And so what I do is try to help people shake up their thinking a little bit and not be so rigid and maybe open themselves up to listening and learning from one another. And when people learn those techniques, when managers learn those techniques, they set a cultural norm that actually can make for a much more functional workplace. So because it comes from the top down. So when leadership is really strong, the people down below have good models to work from.
I love that. I interviewed an executive one time and I asked her, I said, what's your leadership style? And she said immediately, it starts from the top. And I went, that's it.
That's
it. Right. So yeah.
Well, that's taking responsibility too, right? That's a leader.
Absolutely.
Recognizing their responsibility.
Absolutely. So like I said, I could talk to you for hours. You have such a great insight and great examples to share. But I have one last question. So as this podcast is all about focusing, we're not, all of us are not focused all the time, right? There are days that we just have those days that we just can't get it together. And we've got to be at that meeting or we're speaking or we've got to do something. So my question to you is, when you have to go someplace like that, you're not focused, what is the music or the song or the genre that you listen to that gives you game on?
I love so many different kinds of music. I love all music. It's like the quote, you know, what kind of music do you like? There's like two kinds of music, good music and bad music. So I like good music. But I tell you what gets me going is there is a cellist named Tina Guo, G-U-O, and she did the cello for the Wonder Woman soundtrack.
Wow.
And she's done a lot of the soundtracks for like the Zelda video game.
Yeah.
So I put Tina Guo on. I put Tina Guo and I listened to the Wonder Woman soundtrack.
Look at you, this calm person that we've been talking to, listens to Wonder Woman, does her power walk. I love it. I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. It's been such a pleasure. And I know many people who are listening to this are going to benefit this so greatly, not only for themselves, but for their children, their family, their friends, their colleagues. So again, I graciously appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure meeting you.
In today's fast-paced world, maintaining focus can be a challenge. For those dealing with ADHD, it's even more crucial. Hardy Nutritionals presents Daily Essential Nutrients, a groundbreaking, non-habit-forming alternative to mainstream treatments. Imagine a day with crystal clear focus, natural energy, and an improved mood. That's what Daily Essential Nutrients offers. It's not just another supplement. It's a scientifically backed comprehensive micronutrient formula. So what sets it apart? Independent studies. Hardy Nutritionals Daily Essential Nutrients is backed by third-party double-blind research demonstrating its effectiveness in reducing symptoms of ADHD. Forget about unwanted side effects. Daily Essential Nutrients is designed to work with your body, providing balance and support for your brain's natural chemistry. It's time to focus on what matters most. With Hardy Nutritionals, you're not just getting a supplement, you're getting a foundation for better mental health. So visit gethardy.com to learn more and take the first step towards a focused, healthier you with Hardy Nutritionals Daily Essential Nutrients. Use the code TIME2REFOCUS. So TIME2REFOCUS in the promo code area, and they're going to give you a discount on your first order when you sign up. So check them out at gethardy.com.